Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, it's the third day of November, the year 2010. My, praise God, we're alive. Why faith matters, faith and doubt is the topic we're going to be talking today, and we're looking specifically at David J. Volpe, W-O-L-P-E, his book, Why Faith Matters, a wonderful book published. Let me just see if I can get the publisher here. Harper is the publisher. It is still available. And this was published by Rabbi Volpe in, let me see, the first edition. I can't find the right offhand here. But it's a recent book, a great book, and I've been using this book as a recommended reading for anyone, everyone. I want to encourage you, if you have an opportunity to get a book that really will matter in your life, this is it, David Volpe's book. And if you want to find out more about the way in which a modern person faces the crisis of faith and doubt, then listen on for the next 25 minutes or so as we talk about his first chapter. We will not quote extensively from that chapter, but we will make a few comments upon certain concepts that Rabbi Volpe puts in front of us. I want to welcome you to the program. Thank you for tuning in. We're going to get on to our music just for a few seconds here, and then we'll be right back with the first section of Rabbi Volpe's book, Why Faith Matters. Stay with us. This is Pastor Fred. Welcome back. Thank you for staying with us. We're looking at the book, Why Faith Matters, David J. Volpe, a rabbi who wrote a wonderful book several years ago, published by Harper. And we're going to just make a few comments about his first chapter, which is From Faith to Doubt. And Rabbi Volpe makes some very unique distinctions in here. One of them is that saying, I believe in God, is different. He says, I believe in God. I'm going to look at that, page 3. I believe in God is different than saying, I believe in good education. Yes, absolutely, faith is a different statement. You know, one of the things that I think we need to pay a lot of attention to is the language of faith. When I reviewed the book, I found myself discussing with a number of people the whole idea of language. What do we mean when we say God? What do we mean when we say I believe? What do we? I believe that you are. I believe that I am. I believe that the sun shines. I believe that there are ghosts. I believe in spaceman. I believe in extraterrestrials. Now, each one of these belief systems and the word using belief, it's different. You know, I believe that I exist. Well, that proves it to myself. I know that I exist. I mean, in that sense, I can feel myself. I can touch myself. I have self-evident factors. I believe that you exist. Well, let's say that I've never met you, I've never seen you, I've never heard from you. Maybe I've received a letter in the mail, and the letter says, my name is Wan Quan from China, and this person or this being writes me a series of letters, and they're postmarked in China, and they seem to come from China, and they're written in a language that seems to be Chinese, and I take it to interpreters who tell me it is Chinese, and they say the person who wrote this is a Chinese person, and we use all kinds of evidence that this letter is actually from China with China ink, and we use all kinds of forensic evidence. But the person said to me they're Wan Quan. Well, do I know that they are Wan Quan? I don't really. the point here is that I have all kinds of physical evidence and intrinsic evidence and even forensic evidence, but I can't prove that the person, there is somebody or someone on the other side of this writing these letters, but that the person is Wan Quan, or maybe their name is Wan Quan, or what does it mean to say that I believe that Wan Quan exists? I don't have an answer for that. And so when we deal with faith and doubt, we're dealing with what's known as existential questions. Now, how will we interpret this? I could look up a dictionary, and you can look up a dictionary and look up the word existential. But I'm not going to do that, because you can do that on your own. Just go into a dictionary or into the internet, existence, existential. It means to have to do with being. Who am I? What am I? Where am I? How am I? And so on. And these are very, very big questions that we have for ourselves when we deal with the issues of faith and when we deal with the language of faith. When we say, let's use the word eternal, I think this is a very big one for me. Do I believe in eternal? Well, yes. I believe in eternity? Yes. Well, what does it mean? Well, it means never ending. It means never coming to a stop, never reaching the end. Okay, so I say, is eternal the truth? Well, yes, eternal is the truth, but in what sense is it the truth? Well, I believe it to be true. I know it to be true. People tell me that the concept of eternal is true. Okay, so now I need empirical evidence. Now, if I travel in a spaceship at the speed of light for 100 years and come to a stop, then I have reached the eternal, or I have reached eternity. The problem is that it's a relational word. I cannot stop, because eternity is without stopping. It's forever. It's a constant movement and forever. It's like a circle. That's why we use the symbol of a sideways eight or a circle to mean eternity, because no matter where you are on the perimeter of the circle or on the sideways V8 and letter eight, you always will have to go around and around and around and around. You can never come to a stop if you're going to reach eternal. The same thing occurs to us when we use the negative word no. For instance, I might say to you, go into the next room and bring me no lamp. So you go into the next room and you bring me a chair. I say, well, that is no lamp. And you say, yes, it is. It's no lamp. And I say back to you, no, that is not no lamp. That is a chair or a book. Or whatever else that you want to do. And you can continue going on in that example. And every time you bring me something, I say, well, that is no lamp. And so finally you come back without anything in your hands, and you say, well, I bring you this, and you hand me no thing or nothing. And I say to you, which is, you can't hand it to me, you show me nothing. And I say to you, well, that's not no lamp either. You see, because no lamp is a negation of a positive. How are you going to do that? A negation of a positive is the absence of the positive, which is what is the positive. And I would suggest to you that we live in the positive realm. Human beings live in the positive realm. So, going back to my first illustration, and we're talking here about the first section of David Volpe's book, I would say, I believe that Fred is. My name is Fred, and I know that I exist. And I can see myself, I can feel myself, I can know myself, I can intuit myself, I can hurt myself, I can feel pain, I can experience pain, I can inflict pain upon others, I can experience joy, I may bring joy to others, it's their dependence upon whether they will be joyful about my existence or not. But use Wan Quan again, I do not know, see, I have all kinds of other kinds of evidence, but not self-knowledge. And so when you come to faith, it comes down oftentimes to the idea of language. And I think that's where a lot of young people who go off to college, and many of our professors at our universities and colleges who have abandoned their faith or moved into the realm of doubt or become followers of some kind of a religion of non-faith or a religion of no religion or whatever that is, you know, I remember one of my teachers, as a matter of fact, it was my confirmation teacher, who said that ism is a very, very dangerous word, ISM, ism, like communism and Lutheranism and Catholicism and materialism and so on, scientism, all the isms, because he said anything with an ism in it is a religion. And so atheism and agnosticism and all of this kind of thing are all religion in value. And they just are one religion in place of another. And so that was a very interesting thing that has informed me my whole life in the way I might think about the situation I find myself in or how I regard life. Well, David Volpe talks about believing in God, and he talks about how, as a young man, he was challenged in his faith, and he became a devotee of Bertrand Russell, who was a religious, I would just say, to short-circuit this, Bertrand Russell was religiously convicted that there was no use to religion, and he had religious zeal in his proselytism and his advance of the doctrines and the dogmas of no religion. And that's another factor that I think is always open for discussion, is how people of non-religion or no religion are so religious in their zeal and so religious in their practice and so religious in their doctrine and dogma of there being no religion. So what religion do they have other than their own religion? And that is oftentimes a very, very big problem. So Dr. Volpe, Rabbi Volpe, I should say, I think he's a doctor, but anyway, if he isn't, he should be. He's a great writer and a good thinker, talks about the challenge of college to faith. And I think that's an issue that we could discuss at great length on any particular program because, you know, we sort of teach our children, I believe that we teach our children from, or I observe, or I have, you know, I think this is true. I believe it to be true. I've observed it to be true, in my opinion. I share it with you now, that you see how you can get into the language thing, that we train our children to believe that college is the end-all and be-all, that college is the truth. It is the ultimate authority, and that college is what you aim for. College is what you focus upon. College professors are the judges and the teachers and the gurus and the whatevers, prophets and all that. Of us. We teach our children that because from the earliest day we say you have to go to college, you have to get into a good college, you have to, and so on. And then when they get to college, we believe that we are entrusting our children into a system of academic integrity and honesty, when in fact, in the present day, at least in the United States, we are entrusting our children onto a very flawed system, a very imperfect system, and a system of cavalier approaches to philosophy and no theology at all, and a place where there is a lot of doctrinal teaching and a lot of dogmatic teaching and a lot of brainwashing and propaganda. And much of it is against the very things that we would hope our children had gained in their homes. So now when the teachers turn against the parents and say the parents are just, as we heard our president in the United States say a little while ago, people who cling to their faith in their guns or that type of thing, the children, having been taught by their own parents that the professors are the ultimate authority, they believe the professor over against their own parents, over against their own values, and over against their own upbringing, so that when they come back and the parents oppose their newfound brilliance, which they have gotten at the age of 18 or 19 in college, where they know everything and see everything and believe that they have experienced everything and know better than anybody, or when they come home and confront their parents and this becomes an issue for them, the children, having heard from the teacher that the parents will stick to their guns and their religion, this is just a vindication of the correctness of the professor in a sort of a warped way based upon the children's belief that their parents are right, and since their parents have raised them for 16 or 17 years to believe that the college professor is the ultimate authority, then when they come back and find that their newfound thinking from college is challenged or rejected by the parents, they find the parents to be at fault and not the professor. And it takes a long time for individuals who have been raised in this system of belief about college and then found out all kinds of new and what seems to them exciting things which go against their parents' and so forth. You can see the convolution of this. But Dr. Volpe deals with that, Rabbi Volpe, and he does a wonderful job, I think, of explaining some of his experiences there. And then on page 8, he asks a very key question. And we're going to take a pause here. We'll come back to that, and we'll continue on talking a little bit about the book, Why Faith Matters, David J. Volpe, a fine book, and I recommend anyone to get it. Stay with me. This is Pastor Fred, and thank you for staying with us. We're going to be looking at a key question that Rabbi David Volpe asks in his book, Why Faith Matters, Harper and Harper One, Harper and Row Publishers. You can get it from Amazon. Click on the thing if you're on the internet here, or you can find a used copy of it or borrow it from the library. A great book. I would highly recommend it to anyone, anyone. It's a great gift. It's a great gift for people. And I'm sure when you get a copy of it, you're not going to want to give up yours. You'll probably want to buy a second and give it to someone else who you think would be benefited. And I'm sure you'll believe, as I do, that people are greatly benefited from reading this book. It's a short book. It's not very long, and but it's a fine book indeed. Now, he says in page 8 of his chapter on faith and doubt, faith begins with a question, the first question in the Bible. In the garden, God asks Adam, "Where are you?" This is a question addressed to each of us at every instant at all times. The Bible answers the first question with the second. The second question the Bible is asked in the aftermath of murder. When Cain kills Abel, God asks of Cain, "Where is your brother?" We find out where we are, the first question, by discovering whether we care for others, the second question. Cain's response to God is also, revealingly, a question, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Though he intends the answer to be no, it is a question that we understand needs to be answered, yes. This is a wonderful, wonderful section of the book. And not to talk about that, but just to ask the question, where are you? You know, that's one of the things that I find in my own experience. I'm 63 years old. Now, that sounds to me like old. But, you know, really, it isn't. I mean, I don't feel old. I have aches and pains. But anyway, not about me. Let's just go on to say that, where am I in relationship to anything? You know, at 63, I'm in relationship to the grave closer, and from my birth father. And at 63, I'm in relationship to my children differently, because they're married and have their own children, and I have grandchildren. So my relationship, interfamily relationship, is different than when I was 25 and had just recently gotten married and had one child who was an infant. So where are you is one of the big questions. And one of the big questions that he says is, we answer it by relations to others. The first question is answered by the second question. This morning I was reading William Barclay's book on the Ten Commandments, and he talks about the commandments as being descriptional and prescriptive as opposed to proscriptive. And he basically said, you know, the Ten Commandments in the Holy Bible are taken in two directions. They have an up-down direction from heaven to earth or from God to man, and they have a horizontal relation, dimension from man to man or man, person to person, which in a Christian theology forms the cross, man to God, God to man, person to person. And the Ten Commandments, William Barclay says, require that we understand the two things to be one and the same. In other words, our relationship to God is based so much on our relationship to each other or to other persons, and our relationship to other persons is very much a part of our relationship to God, which is to say that I cannot really see God clearly if I'm only looking at myself. I have to look at other people and marvel. Now, I mentioned that when I was 25, we had a little baby, and that was a marvelous experience for us. My wife and I, we had this wonderful, wonderful child. Now, of course, for 9 months, my wife had experienced the birth of the child in terms of in utero and the like, and she had already had the marvelously wondrous, miraculous experience of conceiving a child inside of her body, which is just absolutely unbelievable. But I had not met the person who was my first child, and after the child was born, it was a absolutely stunning, mind-boggling. It was a cataclysmic, cosmic event. I think that every single individual human birth is a cosmic event because a person is being born. It's not a baby. It's not a fetus. It's not even just a human being, or Homo sapien, or genus Homo sapiens, and all that kind of business. But this is a person, and that's why we give our children names, you know, Mary Jane, or Billy John, or whoever it's going to be. They have names because the name is the person is the name. And so William Barclay points out that to understand the commandments correctly, we have to look at the other man, which is what Rabbi Volpe is saying as well, in that the questions of the Bible are relational between myself and other persons and between myself and God and God and me. They're not just notional. They're not just thinking meaninglessly, but they are, in fact, reflective of the truth. So Barclay would say that I have to be in a relationship with another person. I have to see outside of myself. And when I see the other person, I have to recognize in the other person, Barclay would say, his or her personness. And when I get to understanding what it means to not be just a human being or another, a human being or another body, but when I see another person, another personality, and all that goes with those words, then I can begin to get an appreciation for the miraculous nature of life, which then will lead me, Barclay would say, to understanding a relationship with God. In the same way, Barclay would point out that it's when I understand and appreciate God in terms of the wonder and awe and power of life, the life force, the life power, when I understand that to be beyond my comprehension, that to be alive, I'm speaking to you right now, and you're listening to me through the internet, or you're listening to me through an archived program which you clicked on later on in the day, or maybe you're listening to this 5 or 6 days or 10 days after it was broadcast or longer. Excuse me. Excuse me. I apologize for that. Excuse me again. A little cough there. But you're hearing my voice, and like I mentioned, Juan Kwan, you know that you're hearing this voice. You're having the experience of that. And you believe that there's a person behind that. Now, you will judge me, you will interact with me based upon your acceptance or rejection of what I have to say, and whether you agree or disagree, or whether you're enlightened or not enlightened, whether I'm making this clearer or foggier, and so forth. The same way in relationship to God, the two dimensions, the God-to-man dimension and the man-to-man, person-to-person dimension, to be non-sexist in my language, those two elements are one piece in the language of faith. And then Rabbi Volpe ends this particular session by saying that faith is not an idea, but a way to live. What a wonderful, wonderful thing. Now, there's huge amounts in this little tiny section of the book that I haven't even dealt with, and that's why I encourage you to get the book for yourself. I could never do justice to Rabbi Volpe's work here. But faith is not an idea, but a way to live. I think we've been talking about that. Faith is not just static. It's not just stationary. It's dynamic. It's in motion. It's constantly interactive. And I would say that we move from faith to doubt and disbelief regularly, maybe even within one day, maybe within 1 hour. We can move from faith to doubt to unbelief to belief to doubt to faith and so forth, because it's a constantly ongoing dynamic. Why is that? Well, my suggestion to you is it's because you and I, the Bible says, are made in the image and the likeness of God. We are like God. We're not God. That's always been the problem, that human beings believe that because they have such a likeness, such a similitude to God, we are so similar in almost every single way to God that we believe that we are God. And then that's the error. That's the mistake. That's where we slip, you know, and make the fatal fall. But we are so much like God that faith is a relationship with the being that made us. And the reason why we can apprehend and even begin to comprehend the nature and the being of God is because we understand ourselves. And perhaps, if we don't appreciate God, if we don't think there's a God, if we do not understand God's otherness and God's superior power and all the awesomeness of God, maybe we don't know ourselves. Perhaps, as a suggestion for discussion, we could ask ourselves, what is the relationship between self-awareness and self-knowledge and self-examination and self-reflection and our ability to project outside of ourselves and to come to an understanding or comprehension of such a being called God? Well, that brings us to the end of our half hour here. I want to thank you for staying with us and appreciate it very, very much. We're going to be continuing to look for a little bit here at the next couple of chapters of Why Faith Matters, David Volpe. Like I said, we're just touching the surface. I'm just picking out a very few ideas. David Volpe does a much better job than I do, and I would strongly recommend that you get a copy of his book for yourself or for anyone else. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to just take a few minutes to listen to one of my favorite songs, With All I Am. This is our female singer, also downloaded from D-Music. I think it's still there. But With All I Am, and then I'll say a little prayer and we'll end the program. So stay with us. Fred, and thank you very much for listening to Perspectives on the Bible. And may I have this little prayer. Lord, just help us to understand ourselves. Lord, help us to look in to this being, ourselves, that you have made, and come to an appreciation of what you have made in us and who we are in ourselves and where we stand in relationship to other people and you. And through that, Lord, we ask that this exercise in spiritual reflection and self-examination, may that lead us to a greater and a deeper and a bigger understanding of life itself and what it means to be truly alive. We ask this in your holy name. And I thank you very much. This is Pastor Fred. You've been listening to Perspectives on the Bible Blog Talk Radio. Come with us next time, and we'll go back and join in a conversation about more in David Robey's book, Why Faith Matters. Thank you for listening.